Rock the Lakefront June 13th and 14th as Racine Harbor Fest returns for two unforgettable days of live music, mouthwatering food, and nonstop fun. Advance tickets $8, VIP tickets still available online at racineharborfest.com.
Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reporting around 200 Israeli warplanes had attacked Iran's nuclear program and killed several Iranian generals. Tehran confirms the head of the Revolutionary Guard's missile program was among them. CBS's Robert Berger is in Jerusalem.
Israeli officials say the Mossad spy agency infiltrated Iran before the attack. It is said to have smuggled in drones and other precision weapons that were used to target defense systems and missile launchers.
Iran's supreme leader is promising severe punishment for the attack, and we've heard from President Trump today. CBS's Margaret Brennan.
The president's tweet just this morning suggests the Iranian regime can only save itself by making a deal. So he's making this sound like this is not just about setting back their nuclear program.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For 540 WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. This week, the Milwaukee Health Department cleared one Milwaukee public school of lead hazards. La Follette School has been deemed safe for students to return. Senator Tammy Baldwin commented on the lead issue yesterday, saying the Trump administration's firing of CDC lead experts left MPS without necessary federal assistance. Some say the district's slow response didn't help matters. At a recent Kenosha Unified School Board meeting, the facilities director of the district, Pat Finnemore, said he won't talk to the media about MPS lead problems because it would be hard not to criticize them. Finnemore said he couldn't imagine another district ignoring environmental issues. A Milwaukee police officer and a suspect are both recovering after an exchange of gunfire last night. It happened at 46th and Hampton in MPD's District 7. The 30-year-old officer was shot while responding to a call, then returned fire and injured the suspect. Both are now hospitalized. Police also arrested a 19-year-old and recovered two ghost guns. The Milwaukee Police Association had just warned earlier in the day yesterday about critically low staffing in District 7. Milwaukee's No Kings protest tomorrow at Cathedral Square Park aims to bring together anti-Trump forces. Organizations like Code Pink Milwaukee, the Wisconsin Bailout the People movement, and the Party for Socialism and Liberation and others are promoting the effort. Similar demonstrations are planned in cities nationwide. The events in Milwaukee are scheduled to get going at noon tomorrow. The company formerly known as Kohler Energy will close its Saukville plant by the end of the year. Layoffs will impact about 66 workers. The company, now called Relco, headquartered in Kohler, provides power generation and energy storage technologies to clients across the globe. And that's news on 540 WAUK. I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
It's the Brewers and the Redbirds. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Game 2 of the Brewers and Cardinals tonight. The Crew with a 6-0 shutout of the Cards last night, thanks to Jacob Mizorowski in his first major league start. One of his fastballs measured at 102 miles per hour. Meanwhile, Aaron Civale upset he's being moved from the starting rotation to the bullpen and says he wants to be traded.
There's no ill will towards anybody in the city. It's been great home to me and my wife for the past year. I know there's probably going to be some animosity towards this type of thing. There's a negative connotation when this type of thing comes around, but just trying to do what's best.
Brewers manager Pat Murphy responded.
I mean, we deal with players being unhappy all the time, and that's their right to do, and Aaron's got a great history, and he's performed well for this organization, and now it's time for him to go behave.
In college football, the Wisconsin Badgers fined by the NCAA for some recruitment violations, making calls to prospective players before the start date 2 years ago. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This report is brought to you by Freedom Fireworks, with 20 locations throughout southeastern Wisconsin. FreedomFireworksWI.com.
Partly to mostly cloudy today. We'll get to around 68 for a high this afternoon. Tonight, an isolated thunderstorm or two possible. Late this evening, early morning hours, our low 57. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 68. Sunday, partly cloudy with late day showers and thunder showers, high of 71. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable.
Outside now, it's 55.
The 4th of July is right around the corner, and Freedom Fireworks has everything your family needs for a safe and exciting holiday celebration. With 20 southeastern Wisconsin locations fully stocked up with everything from sparklers to artillery shells, thundersnaps to 500-gram aerials, Freedom Fireworks guarantees to bring smiles and cheers to every backyard celebration. For fireworks from all the top brands and specials that can't be beat, go to freedomfireworkswi.com for a location near you. Freedom Fireworks wishes you a safe and happy 4th of July.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Ken, as I like to call him, my least favorite Martin, chairman of the Democratic National Committee.
The other night I said to myself for the first time, I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
Matt Flynn.
You go into combat and the general goes, I'm afraid. He reminds me of the coach of the Jets back in the 90s. The other team would come on the field and say, boy, they look big. No, I swear to God. And the Jets lost 12 games. I mean, right? You can't have this kind of stuff. Get this guy out of here. Put in Ben Wickler.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome actress Stephanie Gurnow, comedian Steve Hofstetter, and it's a bar band Friday night, so I'm joined by Max Inc. host Rocker, who is filling in for Terry Barr. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for mornings with Pat Kreitler.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitler, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitler.
Hey, good morning. It is 7:06. It's nice to have you here up north on this Friday morning, Friday the 13th of June, 2025. And coming up, of course, on Fridays, it'll be our Week in Review panel with Chicago journalists Mark Jacob, Jennifer Schulze, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. By the way, I neglected to mention last hour, folks would normally hear Courier Newsroom's Kiev Akil. He's on vacation this week, which is why we played back some of our interview with Senate Democratic leader Dianne Hesselbein about the state budget. But I think we have Kiev back next week. I forget how long his vacation goes here. But we will have our regular Week in Review panel here. And then 1 hour from now, we will be interviewing Chris Taylor, Judge Chris Taylor, candidate for Wisconsin Supreme Court, potential candidate to go up against far-right Justice Rebecca Bradley in next year's state Supreme Court race in April. Dr. Kristen Lyerly will join us for that. And then just after 8:30, Mike Clemens will be here. A lot of weekend sports to go over, including the big debut last night for a Brewers pitching phenom who was pitching lights out until he rolled his ankle. So we'll have an update on that coming up as well. So much still ahead, including the weekend forecast from meteorologist Brittany Merlot. And as I'm looking at the river of rain on the radar here, Brittany, it stretches from roughly Duluth to La Crosse. It's that wide and stretches way back into the mountains pretty much. I mean, it's just this river of rain that's going to pour right over Wisconsin for a while.
Yes, unfortunately. I mean, we've already picked up a half an inch to an inch and a half to places far west already. And this is just the start of it. So we've got another half an inch to an inch to go today, maybe another half an inch still tomorrow as well. And then we could still see some a little bit linger. And we've got rain, honestly, as we go into the entire next week too. So a very, very active, unsettled pattern. And of course, cloudy skies for a majority of the state. There is spots of sunshine far south along the state line, Madison, Milwaukee area. You could see that as well. So you have chances to stay dry. More sunshine south. That rain is going to continue to pour up north as we go through our day today, becoming moderate to heavy at times. A few rumbles of thunder are also possible as well. And then by this afternoon, a few scattered storms could pop up in the southern areas. Now, it's a smaller chance, but there is that chance. So heads up for that. Otherwise, you're staying dry. Highs today will make it only to the mid-50s where it's raining, mid-70s far south. And as we go to tomorrow morning, spotty rain lingers far northeast. We are looking at some more showers and storms sparking up far northwest in the afternoon and then rolling through the state through the evening. Highs tomorrow will be about 60 degrees up north, 80 degrees down south. So if you're looking for the summer weather and some sunshine, southern parts is where it's at. But everyone is going to be dry on Sunday. Highs in the 70s statewide. But I'll tell you what, heads up, Monday, get that AC ready. It's going to start to get pretty hot and humid with some stronger to severe storms possible. This week, nothing to worry about.
This is more of a nuisance, yep. And then the hot and humid comes back. But for now, nothing like that rain with a stiff east wind slapping it right in your face there. And that's...
Oh, I know. But you know what? That east wind yesterday, I think it cut off a lot of the rainfall for a lot of the state for a while. Yeah. So it actually helped a little bit. But now, yep, here it is.
All right. By the way, your Scotty Summer text to win keyword is coming up in just a moment or two here. First, to pass along on YouTube, Cassandra talking about in our last segment, my husband still sews because his mom taught him. He made an anatomically correct heart for me to take to work. That's very sweet.
I would like to know your profession.
What's that?
I would like to know your profession, Cassandra, because a correct heart.
An anatomically correct heart. It could be fun, you know? So anyway, yes, men should learn to sew too. Good morning from Tigerton, writes Rob. Light rain, windy, 48 degrees, 0.4 inch of rain. Mowed 2 yards in the town of Germania. They were big yards. I had a Big Mac salad at Blazer's Bar and Grill in Split Rock. It was very good. He says, when the Breakfast Club came out in 1984, I was a junior in high school. Remember seeing that movie in Wausau. Definitely jacket type of weather. A northeast wind makes it feel a lot colder. And then concludes by saying, maybe next week you play that Supertramp song, It's Raining Again, for the next week.
But yes, that's perfect, Rob.
Yes. Oh, and Cassandra is an ICU nurse.
Okay. This is an acceptable thing, though. Okay.
It totally tracks. Yes, exactly. All right, Brittany, thanks. We'll talk to you in the next hour.
Sounds good.
Let's get that Scotty Summer text to win contest all done. Final day of it today. Statewide contest on nearly every Civic Media station or 4 times a day. You can win $100 cash or a pair of Brewers tickets, club level, great seats. And every entry puts you in the drawing for one of the grand prizes. There's a Wisconsin Dells Baraboo area getaway and one in Door County as well. Some gas money to get you there. Each time throughout the day, including 3 more times after this before the contest ends, different keywords, text them to us through the Civic Media app. Go to the app, go to one of the stations, use the text button, text us this hour's keyword. And this hour's keyword for a pair of Brewers tickets, the keyword is water. Again, water, W-A-T-E-R, water is the keyword for a pair of Brewers tickets. You have until the end of this hour to text that in, and then you will be eligible for this hour's prize of the Brewers tickets and the grand prize drawings as well. And only 3 more chances to play, 11 a.m., 2 p.m., 4 p.m., different keywords each time. Again, for a pair of Brewers tickets, the keyword to text in is water, W-A-T-E-R. I love that we're giving away the Brewers tickets. These are such good seats, and I'm pretty sure that once the Scotty Summer Text to Win contest is done, we will be going back to where we do some free ticket Fridays for Brewers games, so you'll want to be listening on Fridays throughout the summer here as we try to get you in the seats there at American Family Field. A lot of folks were there last night to see the debut of the Brewers' top pitching prospect, Jacob Mizorowski, 23 years old, making his major league debut last night against the St. Louis Cardinals. And I thought it was pretty cool that he set him down 1-2-3 in the first inning. Second inning, he faced 3 batters, but he needed a double play because he had a walk. And then there were still no hits after 3 innings, no hits after 4 innings. I'm like, this guy's just pitched his first 4 innings of Major League Baseball, no hits. 5 innings, still no hits. At that point, at the place where I'm sitting and kind of looking at the game on my phone, I'm like, guys, this kid has a no-hitter going through 5. Comes out for the 6th inning. I mean, this kid's throwing 100 miles, 101, 102 miles an hour. 102 miles an hour. Comes in, throws a few on the 6th inning, rolls his ankle, says he's feeling cramping in his right leg, and leaves the game with a no-hitter into the 6th inning. Apparently not serious. We will talk to Mike Clemens about that coming up next hour as the Brewers continue their series with the St. Louis Cardinals. Again, the Brewers did win. They brought the bats out. 6-0 was the final. A nice home run by Jackson Churio among the scoring. The series continues against the Cardinals in Milwaukee Coverage begins at 6:35 on several Civic Media stations, Richland Center, Oshkosh, Racine, Kenosha, Park Falls, Hayward. So again, tune in on the radio. Head over to the Civic Media website to learn more. For folks that are following the Stanley Cup Finals and who have to go to bed early, like me, thinking that Florida was going to win another one, they were up 3-0 after the first period. Edmonton came all the way back, even took the lead. And then Florida tied it up with 20 seconds left in regulation, so they went to overtime, and Edmonton was your winner, 5-4 in overtime. The Stanley Cup Finals are tied at 2 games apiece. Game 5 is tomorrow in Edmonton. The NBA Finals tip off tonight, Game 4 in Indiana, where Indiana has a 2-1 lead over Oklahoma City. And then we've got the WIAA Girls Softball Championships in play in Madison right now. We've got Packers mini camp to talk about with Mike Clemens as well. Jordan Love getting married. Aaron Rodgers getting married. There's just so much to cover here. Oh, and a Brewers pitcher is demanding a trade as well. So we got a lot to talk about here with Mike when we meet up with him after our interview with Chris Taylor and Dr. Kristen Lyerly joining us as well. If you missed it, also in the last hour, we basically gave you an update on the legislature and trying to craft a state budget. We mentioned at the start of the week that Republicans basically walked away from the negotiating table. Governor Evers was willing to meet them when it came to a tax cut plan. They were not willing to meet him in doing the things a state budget is supposed to do, like support our schools. And so you saw that reflected in what the Joint Finance Committee did yesterday, where they worked on their tax cut plan, and they worked on a special education spending plan that does increase the state's reimbursement for special education to public schools, but not nearly to the level that would be needed to end what is an endless string of school referendums going on around the state. Republicans are looking at the dollar amount and saying, look, we voted to increase special education funding by more than $200 million. Governor Evers was saying, yeah, you need to add another $900 million more to make schools whole and to end this endless cycle of referendums. But set aside the dollar amounts for a moment and just look at the reimbursement rate at which, you know, the state will help school districts for that larger price tag that comes with special education. Back in 1980, I learned from Molly Beck in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, in 1980, the state reimbursed 2/3 of the cost of special education, 66%. It had come down to about 30%. And then it came up in the last budget to 32%. And Governor Evers said, look, can we at least get back to 60%? Let's get to 60%, help out with special education costs, especially since Republicans reimburse voucher schools at 90%. 90% reimbursement for special education for voucher schools. The governor said, could we at least get to 60? Because we're at 32 right now. Republicans were like those guys in the pawn shop show going, best we can do is 37.5. So that's what they voted on, 37.5, which enables them to say, look at the millions and millions of dollars we put into it, without acknowledging they're hundreds of millions of dollars short. And so you, dear property taxpayer, will continue making up the difference, even as Republican legislators sit on a state surplus of $4 billion. Now, Republicans did work on their tax cut plan as well. And according to Jesse O'Poyne's story in the Journal Sentinel, it means about 1.5 million Wisconsinites will pay lower income taxes. The Republicans are allocating about $1.3 billion to it. It does expand the state's second lowest tax bracket. So it does not seem like an unreasonable tax cut plan. But again, the real story is the governor said, yeah, this isn't what I'd write, but I can go along with this. Now, how about you guys help out our schools that you've been underfunding for 16 years? And Republicans said, no, it's something, it's a shortfall they would just as soon perpetuate. And that's what we have happening right now. All right, still ahead, we'll be talking with our Week in Review panel, Mark Jacob, Jim Santel, Jennifer Schulze, later Judge Chris Taylor, running for Supreme Court, Kristen Lierley, Mike Clemens, all from the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Tarrant County, Texas County Commissioners approved a new county redistricting map June 3rd, diluting the votes of Black and Hispanic voters. But commissioners claim the gerrymandering was for political, not racial reasons. The map likely eliminates a majority-minority district and has drawn widespread condemnation and a Voting Rights Act lawsuit. County Commissioners and Senior County Official Judge Tim O'Hare brought in the Conservative Public Interest Legal Foundation and the National Republican Redistricting Trust to draw the map, according to reporting by Democracy Docket. Their efforts apparently manipulated the districts to gain another GOP County Commission seat and a 4-to-1 advantage. Analysis by the UCLA Voting Rights Project and Southern Methodist University found the approved map packed District 2 Black and Hispanic voters into District 1, reducing the chance a Black or Hispanic candidate would be elected in District 2. Because the county staggers election cycles for different districts, it also disenfranchised as many as 150,000 voters, heavily Black and Hispanic, who can't vote in their current district's 2026 election and must wait until 2028. Voters sued under the VRA and the 14th and 15th Amendments. The commissioners claim that they gerrymandered for political advantage, to which the Supreme Court turns a blind eye, and not racial discrimination. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
We need a fun listener name, something the followers of the show can call themselves. I thought, how about Couch Potatoes?
Potatoes?
I said it as a joke, and Todd cracked up. He goes, I love that. Whatever it is, folks, embrace your inner couch potato. We are not meant to work in the farms and hunt food. We were 1,000 years ago. But now, I think God wants us to sit back and be entertained.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Being blind doesn't look how others may think.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
I know where to find support.
Learn more at fightingblindness.org. A public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
Once again, our Scotty Summer Text to Win contest keyword for this hour is water, W-A-T-E-R, water. And you can text that in using the Civic Media app by the end of the hour to be eligible for Brewers tickets and be part of the grand prize drawing as well. Jim from Brookfield on the text line, why doesn't Governor Evers use his bully pulpit to hold a press conference, use bar graphs, and call out the Republicans on school funding? You're not the first person who has said that. Can more be done? I will let the governor speak for himself on that one. He did make an appearance in the Chippewa Valley yesterday, and local media covered it. I recall seeing sound bites on the governor's impression of, you know, the National Guard being used the way that it was in California, and what would happen if something similar happened here in Wisconsin. So that's going to get us talking to our panel, because again, it was the way that President Trump essentially commandeered the National Guard away from California's governor to politicize and militarize protests against ICE. That has been one of the big stories of the week. So we've got former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel here. He hosts Amicus, a law review, every Saturday morning across the Civic Media Radio Network. Jennifer Schulze is here. You can find her columns on Substack. And, of course, we've got Mark Jacob here as well. You can find what he works on at stopthepresses.news. Hello, panel. It's nice to have you all here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
James, we will start with you, former U.S. attorney, where for a time the Trump regime, and I think I might just go with that word now, the Trump regime's plan for a military presence in every major American city was dealt a bit of a setback by a judge, although not then the setback was kind of set back a bit. Tell us what's the latest on that.
Sure. So this is
Federal Judge Charles Breyer, B-R-E-Y-E-R, he's in San Francisco, and he receives, again, this emergency petition from the governor saying that the president does not have the authority to do what he is doing there. And in a monumental 36-page ruling, it's extraordinary. Again, I always assign reading to all your listeners, right? It's worth reading. It really is very good. It's accessible. He basically says that there is not a rebellion. He invokes the statute. For what it's worth, it's the Military Act of 1903, Section 12406. And you can only do this if, in fact, the Commonwealth, the United States, is invaded, or there's a danger of invasion, there's a rebellion or some danger, and the president is unable with regular forces to execute the laws of the United States. He goes through all this analysis and says, okay, we're looking at what we're seeing on the ground here, not a rebellion, not an invasion, sort of like the Alien Enemies Act analysis as well. Excuse me. And in the end, he says, you know, just because there are some individuals who may have caused some violence here does not rise to the level of rebellion. And notably, he says, individuals' right to protest the government is one of the fundamental rights protected by the First Amendment. Just because some stray bad actors go too far does not wipe out that right for everyone. The idea that protesters can so quickly cross the line between protected conduct and rebellion is untenable and dangerous. He says, nope, got to stop it. The Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, the appellate court beyond him, does enter an administrative stay. That sounds as bad as it probably is, but it basically suspends that for a while they can take a look at his order. It doesn't mean that they have reversed it. That is not the case. They simply said, we'll keep everything in place for now. It does mean that for this weekend and the No Kings protests around the country, Donald Trump remains in power there, and the judge's order is not in effect. So back and forth a bit, but a very compelling piece of writing from the judiciary, once again, saying, Donald Trump, but you don't have the authority to do this.
Which, Mark Jacob, we all knew. It was self-evident that this had nothing to do with actual rebellion. This was about using, authoritarian, dictatorial, levers of power to put your opponents at the end of a gun.
Yeah, I mean, that's the basic MO of these folks is calling everything an emergency or an invasion or an insurrection, and therefore they can, not go through due process and other normal efforts, instead can just do whatever they want. It's, it's Trump trying to be a king, in LA, they sent in the guard. But before they send in the guard, things calmed down because, obviously it was the kind of street disturbances that happen in this country sometimes, and the local authorities were able to handle it. And so Trump claimed, well, the National Guard fixed the whole thing. Well, the National Guard hadn't even arrived when it got everything calmed down. So, I mean, they're just lying about this. And Pat, I also want to mention in this context that Kristi Noem said yesterday, everyone is focusing on the Padilla stuff and the senator being thrown to the ground and handcuffed, which is, I understand that why they would, but Kristi Noem at that same event said that they were sending, that their attempt was to liberate California and Los Angeles from the socialists. They said that was their goal. Well, that's in effect, that's regime change. That's them deciding that they're going to subvert duly elected authorities of a state.
Oh, that's nothing new. That undermining the results of an election. You've had, in Florida, was it the governor replacing sheriffs or district attorneys, things like that.
Right.
So this is very much par for the course. And Jennifer, quick before this break here, we've got a minute here. But one of the things at the heart of coverage of this is this a riot or is this a protest? And how newsrooms decide to approach the way they cover these things.
Well, it's a riot if you work for Donald Trump. So if you're right-wing media, it's a riot. And in fact, he's been calling it an insurrection. Obviously, it's neither. But if I spent a lot of time this week on right-wing media, Fox in particular, and I thought my head was going to light on fire. And that is the predominant media outlet in the country. And people are being told things that are so wildly false about Los Angeles and being shown AI generated pictures of things that are I mean, they're fake.
They are. And so we'll talk more about the fakery and the perils of news coverage here when we return with Jennifer, Jim, and Mark, all part of our Friday morning, powered by Up North News, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitler. We'll be back right after the Midwest Farm Report and an update. You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitler.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Yes, consumers are paying more for beef at the grocery store, but it has not changed their consumption patterns. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Friday. I talked about it with Dr. Glenn Tonsor. Tonsor is a professor in agriculture economics at Kansas State University. He also coordinates the monthly Meat Demand Monitor Survey. Tonsor says the latest survey shows that consumers are anxious about international trade relationships and the potential for unemployment, but they still keep buying beef.
I'll just call it the meat protein is in, right? So this broad desire to have meat protein in your diet. More and more people are telling us they self-declare as a meat consumer. The rate of vegan vegetarianism is actually declining per the MDM. So to put a bow on that is those are trends that are going, you know, they're conflicting. So far, we are seeing retail demand strength hold up. So grocery store for at home, which is consistent with the grilling, as you said, but we're seeing notable weakness in food service. So away from home consumption. And that fits the macroeconomic concern we're talking about here.
Dr. Glenn Tonsor, ag economist at Kansas State University, talking about the latest monthly meat demand monitor. You can take a deeper dive on that consumer information. Go to agmanager.info. That's agmanager.info.
Giving back, it's at the heart of the Wisconsin farmer, and it starts with supporting the backbones of our community. That's why the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board invests in soy foam for our firefighters. Soy foam TF1122 is the first and only firefighting foam green screen certified at the gold level. As a PFAS-free firefighting foam, it's safe for you and the environment. A safe future for your community. Thanks to your soy checkoff. Learn more at wisoybean.org.
The only competition that really matters is you versus you. And with the performance of Veltima fungicide from BASF, you can take your best results even further. Veltima fungicide is on your side to out-yield the competition by an average of 7 bushels per acre, but you've never been average. Beat your own record, get every bushel you deserve, and make this your best season yet with Veltima fungicide from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
And the last member of the Wisconsin State FFA officer team was announced yesterday. Amala Draxler from Glenwood City has been named the Wisconsin Association of FFA president for 2025-2026. Her parents are Mike and Rebecca Draxler, her advisor, Kirsten Condor. If you'd like to follow up on all the FFA activities from this week's state convention, check it out, MidwestFarmReport.com, Midwest Farm Report on Facebook. That's Food News on a Friday. I'm Pam Yonke.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Partly to mostly cloudy today. We'll get to around 68 for a high this afternoon. Tonight, an isolated thunderstorm or two possible. Late this evening, early morning hours, our low 57. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 68. Sunday, partly cloudy with late day showers and thunder showers. High of 71. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 55.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
State's Eric Kelder-Royce.
The vast majority of people on Medicaid are already working, and it is Medicaid that makes it possible for them to work. People who are disabled or have chronic illnesses and without that health care, they would be out of the workforce. They would have no ability to participate in the economy, and now they can. Medicaid is one of the greatest workforce programs this country has ever built, and they are trying to dismantle it, and with it, they're going to take people's lives and economic security.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app. Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll be live from WGBW in Green Bay, Wisconsin, along with the morning crew here, Mino and the Mayor. Find out all things Green Bay. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Did you know you can pod this program? Absolutely. Head over to Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe. And that way you can listen to us on demand, listen back to previous shows as well. We'd love to have you along as a subscriber. All right, let's bring in that Friday panel, Chicago veteran journalists Jennifer Schulze and Mark Jacob and former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. Or to be more specific about it, you can get Mark's newsletter at stopthepresses.news. You can also follow him at couriernewsroom.com. Jennifer Schulze's Indistinct Chatter is on Substack. Search for @newsjennifer. And, of course, Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel can be heard on Saturday mornings starting at 9 on several civic media stations. Head to civicmedia.us to learn more. Needless to say, the big story this week has been Trump politicizing and militarizing protests against his mass deportation, which, again, took a turn that, while some people say it was expected that, you know, you're trolling Home Depot parking lots and things like that. This was also the guy that said, well, I just want to go after the bad guys. I want to get after the criminals and the thugs. Clearly, that's not what's been happening here, Mark. And so it was surprising / amusing to see Trump post on his little social media site yesterday that he's aware that this mass deportation thing is starting to hurt farmers, and so he's going to make some changes. Is he? And does he really understand, or was that just a bone to throw out and go, you know, I was never just going to go after the bad guys?
Well, I think that that's just a bone to throw out. I think he's just saying that to, you know, to try to keep his base in his base, you know, because I think that his base is eroding. His poll numbers are bad. And I mean, he's making a mess out of everything. And I don't think, I mean, clearly all these consequences of this immigration enforcement were easily predictable. I mean, come on. I mean, if you got a lot of immigrants picking, you know, farm products, you know, picking crops, and they go away and you scare the hell out of them and chase them out of the country. Well, what's going to happen? You know, how's that going to affect our dinner table? You know, a lot. And so everyone knows that. And so for him to act like, you know, he just woke up a day or two ago and realized that it's going to affect the farm industry is crazy. You know, I just think that I don't think Trump is a member of government. I don't think what I'm saying is I don't think that he's trying to govern. I think he's trying to be political, and they think he's trying to exploit government for his business, but he's not trying to implement policies that help people in any way whatsoever. It's all a matter of him trying to increase his own personal money and power any way he can.
Yes, there's a difference between those who want to govern and those who want to rule. And right. Jennifer, again, it's important to make that distinction that we're having the one discussion about mass deportations and how they're being handled versus the protests against that and how the Trump administration is covering them. And, you know, whether media is covering them as a protest or as a riot, it certainly is apparent that the Trump administration still wants to go full steam ahead, to the point where at a news conference for Homeland Secretary Kristi Noem yesterday, a U.S. senator from California wanted to talk to the secretary and was tackled and handcuffed and dragged away despite identifying himself. And while Kristi Noem essentially wasn't really telling the truth, I would argue, about the circumstances behind it, I don't think I should, anybody should hold their breath expecting an apology, and that's things like this won't happen again.
Well, she met with Padilla after the incident, and I was just reading an interview that he gave about that meeting where he said she didn't apologize. So let, you know, that's not going to happen. I do think that in a normal world, somebody who was leading a press conference and is in a leadership role in the United States government would have said, hey, what's going on over there? You know, and she kept talking. She did not stop. And just so everybody's clear, she knows who Alex Padilla is. He is the chair of the subcommittee, or the, you know, the ranking member of the subcommittee on immigration in the United States Senate. That is the committee that deals with many of Kristi Noem's issues. She knows who he is. They've met before. You know, when her team says he was engaging in political theater, I would argue they were engaging in political theater by pretending, oh my God, there's gambling going on here. They were, you know, shocked that some, you know, oh, who is that? They knew who he was. She didn't try to stop it. And even as he kept saying who he was, if you watch that video, it's brutal.
And if it can happen to a United States senator from California, Jim, looking at this as an attorney, and that people have, you know, First Amendment rights, but if they can do this to a senator, again, you have an increasing amount of law enforcement officials that, honestly, I think have a personal fork in the road they've got to come to, as far as whether they're there to uphold the law or if they are crossing the line into, you know, territory that I didn't think we'd see in this country, with hidden police and acting in extra legal means.
Pat, that's one of the principal things that comes to my mind whenever I see, again, the Padilla incident, but beyond that, so many other things where you've got these masked, apparently federal officers and others who are out there executing their orders, doing what they're being told. But I do wonder, again, having worked with law enforcement, state, local, and especially federal law enforcement for the better part of 30 years, these are people who've taken an oath to defend not a president, not a governor, no one particular person, but the Constitution and basic principles about how these things are to work. You have to wonder if an awful lot of them, and we'll get another big test of that this coming weekend, if in fact there is additional involvement of law enforcement stopping these protests, you have to wonder if they themselves, as they're going to work in the morning, engaging in these arrests, whether it's tackling Padilla or doing other things out there, if they are wondering inside their own cognitive analysis, what am I doing here? And it really is contrary to the basic concepts of law enforcement. Once again, to arrest somebody, to place them in custody, just a little bit of civics here again, you got a probable cause to believe that they're violating the law, that there has been some law that has been obstructed here. And again, free speech, as the judge in California just said a day or so ago, it's very strong. And all those things have got to be analysis going on inside the heads of all these law enforcement officers wondering what they're doing.
But yet some of those law enforcement officers, Mark, are targeting the journalists themselves. I mean, firing rubber bullets at reporters and camera crews, which I don't think is accidental. I think that there's a degree of state-sanctioned intimidation going on here.
Well, if you see that video of the Australian reporter and the, you know, the people behind her, the law enforcement officials behind her, people behind her, shoot, that rubber bullet they shot at her, clearly there were no protesters in the area. She was doing a stand up, and they're behind her, and they fire at her, and it's just shocking. And I think that's one of the things that's one I think most dangerous about Trump is that he has clearly made the news media the enemy, and he's made the facts the enemy, and so he's trying to get his people in law enforcement to see it the same way. And to, I mean, he doesn't want us to cover this kind of stuff. He wants the cruelty toward immigrants to happen without anyone paying any attention to it or cheering it on. He does not want the facts to be out there.
No. And again, that strongman thing is intentional to try to win some kind of a PR war, if you will. Jennifer, it is very easy. We've talked about AI images, social media algorithms. How did one reporter call it? catnip for right-wing agitators, all the misinformation that's out there. Should we wring our hands about it here, or can we talk about whether there's any way around it?
I think one of many things we've learned through the Trump years is that all of us, particularly media, but everybody, need to be really careful about what images we collect and we share. And I would say with news media, again, I watched Fox, it almost killed me. And they're so selective about the pieces of video, images from LA that they take to feed their version of things. So there's a scene, if something's on fire, it doesn't matter if that one little thing is on fire over here and nothing else is happening anywhere near it, which is the case in LA. I've seen the map of where the protests are. It's like a teeny little couple blocks, and LA is huge. LA is not on fire, but Fox takes that one little clip of video of something burning, like the Waymo cars, and gives you the impression, the way they treat it and how frequently they share it, that the whole city's on fire. Media collecting those images, I mean, we can't do anything about Fox. They are state media. But everybody else really needs to kind of take a beat on it. It might look really cool on television to have a little clip of fire, but if you're going to use that, you need to tell people the context and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it.
Right. Another headline in Press Watchers says, how many people were arrested is a lousy way to cover protests. That is not the barometer you should be using. And Jennifer, you point to two different headlines. One says, U.S. Marines deployed to Los Angeles to help quell anti-ICE riots. Whereas the other headline says, L.A. protests. Trump sends thousands more troops in authoritarian move. Same thing. Two different ways of looking at it. Folks
reporting on exactly the same story.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. From an accountability standpoint, Jim, when we talk about the law enforcement officers, and I don't want to overreact here, but I also don't want to downplay this, that at some point this is all going to pass. To what degree should some of these law enforcement officers understand that there may, I would hope, will be accountability for abuses once this is all over and other people are in charge?
The United States Supreme Court has said just that, Pat. We know that there is constitutional exposure if, in fact, even under assignments, even under direction, you as a law enforcement officer, and that applies very, very broadly, you do something that violates someone else's constitutional rights. You bust down a door without a warrant, without consent. You arrest somebody without probable cause. You engage in a search of an automobile, again, without probable cause to believe that there is something in that automobile. It leads to a scintilla of evidence of a crime. You do those things, you're violating the Constitution, and you've also identified what is in the law regarded as victims of your conduct. It's called Bivens actions. It's after a Supreme Court case that says you can, in fact, file a lawsuit. Frankly, on behalf of the government, I was involved in a lot of those lawsuits, wrestling with what the parameters of that are. And there is that exposure. And it's, frankly, it can't even be monetary exposure. You can plainly get damages against the government for doing these kinds of things. And again, you look back at this Bivens case in particular, as I often do, commend reading it, because it talks about the fundamental right of law enforcement, yes, to do what it is doing to ensure safety and security, but also the right of the people not to have their basic fundamental rights of theirs trampled on by government.
For some of you, a local update is next. For others, we'll continue the conversation here, including ABC firing somebody. The headline from a Mark Jacob video, when telling the truth is a fireable offense. You can catch Jim Santel on Amicus Law Review Saturday mornings at 9, Mark Jacob's newsletter at stopthepresses.news, and Jennifer Schulze's Indistinct Chatter on Substack. Search for News Jennifer. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag.
This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Today's job market is full of demand for skilled trade workers. Electricians, welders, mechanics, these and other trades are the backbone of every community. They're also a huge part in making sure the Army National Guard is always fulfilling its mission of service to our country and communities. Soldiers train to keep the power flowing, engines running, and supplies moving. The skilled trades these soldiers perform are the same ones needed in today's civilian workforce. Army National Guard soldiers are on the fast track to learning skills that can set them up for success at home with companies looking to hire the best. With options from plumber to helicopter mechanic and everything in between, soldiers are able to select the trades that best fit their lives. Their resumes are being built through their paid training and part-time service. Find out how you too can learn a trade profession and serve your community and country by visiting NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
The soap scientists have found a way to incorporate Sydney Sweeney's actual bathwater into the soap. What if she doesn't smell good? I know she's beautiful.
What if it smells terrible?
What if she stinks? And no one is going to tell her that because she's Sydney Sweeney. Here's an open invitation to Sydney Sweeney. Come by the Nightlight Studios. I'll smell you and let you know if this is a good product.
Maybe drop off, you know.
And give us a few bucks. Yes.
Yeah. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Matt Nair on air.
Rick Reed is here, an economics instructor.
Remember the film, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? A driver is riding parallel to him and honking their horn saying, you're going the wrong way. And Candy and Steve Martin go, ha, 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 how do they know where we're headed? Congress and the administration are saying, this is what we're going to do for our budget. But at the end of the day, the Congressional Budget Office basically said that bill is going to create another $3.8 trillion in debt over the next 10 years.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings, 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Mommy, how come I can't sit in the front seat?
Because I love you and you're just not ready yet.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
One more time, the keyword in the Scotty Summer Text to Win contest is water, W-A-T-E-R. You've got 7 minutes or less to text that to us through the Civic Media app for a pair of Brewers tickets and to be eligible for the grand prizes that will be given away as well. Up North News is now a 7-newsletter-a-week place for information Monday through Friday, then a sports newsletter on Saturdays, and my Sunday mornings with Pat Kreitlow politics newsletter on Sunday mornings. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. It will no doubt include some of my conversation with Supreme Court candidate Chris Taylor. She is coming up right after the 8 o'clock news, right after we conclude things with our panel here, Mark Jacob, Jennifer Schulze, and Jim Santel. Mark, I was mentioning before the break here that you and Stephen Betchloss have the On Target video series, and the headline here is, when telling the truth is a fireable offense. Can you give, for folks that didn't follow this, a little bit of background on what Terry Moran of ABC did, wrote, or said that led to him no longer being with the network?
Yeah, Terry Moran, longtime veteran of ABC News, posted on social media last week, I believe, or over the weekend, that Donald Trump and especially Stephen Miller were world-class haters, and explained that they had hate in their hearts and especially he was focusing on Miller, who, you know, obviously is, you know, has these white supremacist feelings and is turning it into policy. And it was a little unusual thing for a correspondent to post. I could see why, if I were his boss, I would have been a little alarmed. I'll say that. But at the same time, it was true. I mean, the thing about it was true. I mean, Stephen Miller is pushes this kind of great replacement theory that brown people are coming into the country to, you know, to steal the culture from white people and stuff like that. I mean, he is a hater. And so it was one of those things where, yeah, I mean, how much should he have been punished for telling the truth? And is it okay to tell the truth in today's world in journalism? And my feeling about that is that I feel like that, I don't know Terry Moran, but I feel like he must have been, I think he was felt really bad about having to mute the truths for so long and put things and frame things so much in careful tones when what's happening in front of us is a racist, sexist attempt at dictatorship. I mean, that's really, Pat, that's what's going on right now. And for you to be in the news media and try to, you know, kind of soft pedal that must drive people crazy.
Jennifer, what was your own reaction to, you know, what he said and how ABC handled it?
Well, I think it's bigger than just that post of Terry Moran's. Recall that Terry Moran a few weeks ago did that interview with Donald Trump that got quite a bit of publicity because Moran pushed back on the idea, not the idea, the actual photo that Trump had posted showing Kilmer Obrego Garcia Photoshop with what Trump said were MS-13 numbers on his hand, but it was Photoshop. The president of the United States, let's remember everybody, posted a photo, a Photoshop photo, lying about someone that they mistakenly took out of the country and put in a nasty prison in El Salvador. And Moran did this interview with Trump where he pushed him on it. And since then, Trump and his supporters, particularly in right-wing media, have been attacking Moran quite aggressively and demanding he be fired. So I think it's a culmination of all of that. I too, like Mark, if I was his boss, I'd be like, oh my God, I don't need this. I would have probably said, you know, I would not have fired him, but I don't know what else has been going on there. I do think it's more than coincidence that his contract was up that same day or a day later, which also doesn't make sense because those contracts are negotiated months in advance.
Right.
Yeah. So something is still a little fishy about it, but I think bottom line, Disney got weak knees.
You think he was on the way out anyway, and this was just his party?
I think the whole thing doesn't make a lot of sense, but I think that they Donald Trump is, you know, putting a lot of pressure on these big companies, and I think it worked in this case.
Yeah, these countries are capitulating, or these companies are capitulating. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I agree with you. I feel like we don't know everything there yet. And if I were his boss, I'd be like, okay, you don't need to apologize to them, but there you should make some kind of a statement about, you know, what's the word they like to use? I was inelegant with my choice of words, or something like that, to say, look, I'm a journalist. I should do better than that. Jim, quickly to you from the text line, from somebody wanted to know if there was any update in the arrest of Judge Hannah Dugan in that case. Anything new to report on that this week?
Nothing breaking in the sense of every day breaking, but this is that period of time when the judge and the federal court there, the magistrate judge now, ultimately Judge Edelman, reviewing the motions to dismiss. And as we talked before, this is premised in part upon the 10th Amendment, judicial immunity. They are fascinating concepts. Ultimately, Judge Edelman will have to decide them. It's going to be quiet for a while. There could be an evidentiary hearing, but unlikely we're going to hear anything anytime soon. The trial date set for July, almost certainly not going to stick just because you've got all these other things pending, but it may well be that sometime later this summer we'll get an initial recommendation from a magistrate judge about how to resolve those motions. Goes up to the judge, he'll do that, and maybe sometime in the fall there could be a follow-up hearing of some kind that will warrant some attention. But pretty quiet right now, I suspect, and for most of the summer. Not to say that there's not a lot of litigating going on. Lawyers do a lot of things in writing, a lot of filings with the clerk of court.
All right. Jim Santel's Amicus Law Review can be heard Saturday mornings, 9 o'clock on Civic Media, playback on Sunday mornings. Mark Jacob has the Stop the Presses newsletter, stopthepresses.news. Jennifer Schulze's Indistinct Chatter is on Substack at NewsJennifer is the handle you want to look for. Jennifer, Jim, Mark, thank you as always. Have a happy weekend, everybody. All right. Good to see you all. Appeals Court Judge Chris Taylor is standing by and is going to join us to talk about her announced campaign for a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court in April of next year, quite possibly up against incumbent conservative Justice Rebecca Bradley. That's coming up here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Special Reports. Iran's supreme leader is vowing Israel will pay heavily after its warplanes hit more than 100 military sites inside Iran, as well as the nation's nuclear program. Prime Minister Netanyahu.
The Jewish state refuses to be a victim of a nuclear holocaust perpetrated by the Iranian regime.
CBS's Robert Berger from Jerusalem.
This is not a one-off kind of a strike. This is going to come in waves with Israel attacking Iran. And certainly Iran is going to be launching ballistic missiles and drones toward Israel.
Israel says it notified the White House before the attack. Correspondent Margaret Brennan.
So far, it appears Israel's air defenses, thanks in part to American-provided equipment, they're able to repel